From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
Behind the Badgers coming to you in the moment. We're switching around the days we release this. So again, I apologize for that. Thanks for finding us during the week. Things are irregular when you're trying to follow a basketball team during the season. But you got us here. We're recording this right after Wisconsin's 70-57 win over Ohio State at the Kohl Center on Sunday. And we also just got done recording a great interview, a great conversation, story hour with two of the legends from Wisconsin's 2000 Final Four team, Mike Kelly and Andy Kowski. That was a fun conversation. People, it's worth sticking around for it. Anything, Brian?
It's great. And you don't have to even be Patrick Herb, who lived it in the moment, to have an appreciation for what we talk about with those guys. It was great.
Yeah. So stick around for that. We'll get to that in just a minute. Let's recap what we just saw, our reactions from Wisconsin's win over Ohio State Sunday. Brian, lead off. What was your biggest takeaway of Wisconsin putting away the Buckeyes?
I thought it's funny that you used the word irregular to describe our broadcast or our recording schedule.
Because, I know where you're going.
Because that's what this season has been, irregular. You look at a Wisconsin team that went to Minnesota and struggled and trailed by double digits. Today, you make some shots, you play some good defense, and you're leading by double digits, and you're able to go on a 16-0 run into halftime that really set the tone for a game in which Ohio State didn't have a chance to really claw its way back into it.
Right. So when Wisconsin played Ohio State the first time around in Columbus right after New Year's, the Buckeyes were fifth in the country, riding high. That was a big-time win for Wisconsin at the time. Signature win. This is an Ohio State team that had climbed to number two, one of the best teams in the country at the time. They fell on some hard times right after that. Maybe Wisconsin was responsible for that. Probably coincidental, but they did. They ended up losing 6 out of 7 during a stretch. Well, they've kind of gotten back right prior to Sunday's game where they had won 3 in a row, Northwestern, Indiana, and at Michigan, a good win. So Ohio State back on the upswing. And then Wisconsin takes it to them today and gets the first time that they've swept Ohio State in the regular season since 2005. And it's a good Ohio State team. So that's a big accomplishment for this team.
I mean, this is another quad one win for Wisconsin. The Buckeyes came in ranked 17th in the net. So now you've swept a team that's a top 20 net ranked team, and you've picked up your 7th quad one win of the year, which there's only a handful of teams in the country that have more than that.
3.
And you can go to the fact that Wisconsin now has 14 quad one games it's played in, more than anybody else in the land. So it's the statistical proof is there that this is a big win for the Badgers.
Right. So the Badgers are a little bit of an oddity, right? They've got 10 losses. So you can't deny that. Now, 5 of them came before Micah Potter was playing, so I think that the committee will take some of that into account, that they are playing better with Potter in the lineup. But they have 10 losses, but they also have 7 of the best wins that of any team in the country. And so they've got this interesting resume, sort of like Purdue, right? Purdue is another team that has double-digit losses, but some terrific wins. Now, it'll be interesting to see. We never really know exactly how much weight the selection committee for the NCAA tournament puts into net. But it is a big steering metric. We know that. It's one of several metrics that they use, but it is one. So in that sense, Wisconsin is, I think they entered the game maybe 37th or something like that in the net rankings, which certainly puts you in the conversation for the tournament. Today will, you would think, theoretically help them in that. And like you said, they've got all these quad one wins, and they've got more opportunities coming because that's life in the Big Ten.
Right. I mean, really outside of the volume of the losses in total, that is the knock on this team's resume at this point.
Right, their only questionable loss, if you will, was losing to New Mexico and Brooklyn, where that one falls under quad three as a neutral because New Mexico's season has kind of fallen apart since then. And I'm a firm believer if the Badgers play New Mexico right now, they beat them handily. But it was a different team at that point, and Wisconsin had a terrible shooting day for that.
Yeah,
that
I'm looking back at the schedule, and half of those losses came within the first 2 weeks of December. So,
yeah.
It's I don't know, if you were looking at a team that lost 5 games since then, and you sort of remove that, and you can't.
No.
But you sort of remove that from your thinking about where is this team at right now.
Once upon a time, the selection committee used to talk about last 10 games, as that was a big part. They have since gotten rid of that. That is not, they say publicly, that is not part of the equation now, that you were trending the right way at the end of the season. So to what you're saying. Sure. But okay, so let's talk about this exact game and what our takeaways for it. I'll go first. I thought Aleem Ford had a big game, had a big presence. You know, 10 points isn't going to blow you away, but he had 9 rebounds. He had a couple big buckets underneath where in the past he's been a 3-point shooter, and that was kind of what he was able to give you. Now, I think he's starting to round his game out, and we've seen it a few games in a row now where he can be a big X factor as another scoring weapon and a physical presence for them.
Yeah, there's some aggressiveness on the interior from him.
Yeah, he had a big offensive rebound and got fouled in the second half that helped Wisconsin extend their lead. 4 offensive rebounds in this game, and that's not something that we're necessarily used to. So maybe he's stringing a couple things together. What other takeaways did you have?
I'm impressed with Dimitri Trice and how he's continued to grow as a leader, as a point guard down the stretch of the season. Career high 8 assists today. You know, over the last 4 games, he's got 25 against 7 turnovers on the season. His assist to turnover ratio now 2.2. So I like the way he's doing a good job of taking care of the ball, distributing, and it helps when shots fall, and they did for Wisconsin today. But I like where things are at with Trice.
I also feel good if Brevin Pritzel turns into John Bryant, who was honored at halftime of today,
yeah,
and becomes this legendary 3-point sniper. Like, he's got it in him. We've seen it. He's been prolific shooting the basketball at times. And when he goes 5 for 6 today, like he did, that is, you're talking about X factors. That's another one that takes you from 5 to 10 in a hurry when right. He can do that.
Plus his ability to show up on the boards. And he shows some flashes inside.
He's tough. He's tougher than just a 3-point shooter. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And he's cagey a little bit too. He's had a few in the last few games. He's had a few buckets underneath the rim. You're like,
he has some takes.
How did he get that off? Yeah. What else? So Wisconsin ended the half on a 16-0 run. Their defense in the first half was terrific. Set the tone. Really stifled what Ohio State was doing. Buried them. Love to see too that Wisconsin put the pedal down and kept it going in that second half. There were a couple mini runs by Ohio State, but it never got within single digits. It never got to the point where it was interesting. And we've seen Wisconsin struggle with a lead a few times this year.
Yep, that was a huge takeaway for me. Was
today
was
didn't
putting
happen.
Them away. Yep, exactly.
So moving forward, Wisconsin has 7 Big Ten games remaining, and they go to Nebraska next on Saturday. Nebraska, one of the bottom 2 teams in the league, so opportunity for a road win in that one.
And there aren't many of them.
No, and Nebraska has played much better at home. They beat Iowa at home. This is no gimme game. Wisconsin already saw Nebraska once and beat them by double digits here at the Kohl Center. That'd be great to go get that one, start a little streak going, because after that, 4 of the final 6 games in the league are at home, where Wisconsin has been really good this season. Last thing I want to touch on was how awesome the 2000 reunion was. It's going to segue right into our conversation with Kelly and Kowski, but really cool synergy surrounding this game. There were some social media videos this last week that were really cool leading into it. The crowd obliged and redid the Dick Bennett era tradition of standing before tip-off and remaining standing until Ohio State scored. And
the throwback uniforms seem to be universally appreciated.
Don't be surprised if the players ask to wear those again or maybe all season, because they really liked them.
Yeah,
and judging by the social media feedback and from what I've heard from people too, like, everybody really loved the look of them.
The whole thing was great, but the payoff with the huge round of applause for Dick Bennett when he walked out on the floor,
that
sewed the whole thing up.
I was happy for him to have that moment, right?
Very
to
cool.
be back in the Kohl Center with that standing ovation, and they had the lights out and the banner was hanging down, the old banner that they from right after the 2000 season, and huge turnout. I mean, it was awesome how many players came back. I mean, almost all of them, or only 1 or 2 that weren't. So awesome weekend. Don't take our word for it. Let's hear right from the source. Let's hear what Mike Kelly and Andy Kowski had to say about this weekend and their trip down memory lane from the 2000 magical run. I'm super excited to have Mike and Andy here. So let me preface this by saying, in 2000, I was a student here at UW. So I lived this from the opposite side that you guys did, as like the fan who was running around State Street, like going crazy. But I'm so excited to talk about your perspective and everything that's gone on to this weekend, getting you guys back into town this past weekend. So let's start with this. Catch up our listeners, where you guys are, what your lives are like today. Mike, you go first. Where are you living? What's your family look like?
Live in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Got 4 children, 3 in high school already. My oldest is driving, so that's a little scary. And then my youngest is in 8th grade. So I have 4 kids, really close. And now to see them grow up Everybody tells me or tells you, you know, when your kids are young that it goes fast and you're like, yeah, but the days are long. That's all you can think about. And now that they're in high school, I'm like, oh man, they're going to be going off to college pretty soon. So it's a little wild. And to be back here for 20 years is also another reminder how long it's been.
Mike, what are you up to these days?
Well, I only have two kids. I have a daughter who's 13 and my son is 10, married, live in New Berlin, working, coaching the kids, being a dad. And it is awesome being back in Madison, celebrating the 20-year reunion for the Final Four.
Are you a basketball coach?
I am, yeah.
Are you, Mike, you coach?
Yep, coach our kids, youth basketball.
Do they know your history? Do your own kids know your history?
They do now. It took them a while.
They got YouTube.
Yeah. Now that they're on YouTube and you can go back and watch the Purdue game and they can see some of the dunks. So it's a little bit more real for them now compared to...
That's just it. All my kids care about is, did you dunk, Dad? Of which I didn't, obviously. So Andy's
zero
way
career
cooler.
Dunks?
Yeah, zero career dunks.
Okay, all right. Steals record, but no dunks.
Yeah. So the measure of basketball skill is...
Yeah, the dunk meter was stayed on zero. Yeah, so for at least for my kids, yeah. So Andy's way cooler than my kids.
And my son yesterday goes, what's your best play ever? And I was like, that was probably the dunk where Mike, we did a pick and roll, and then he dished the ball to me. That was Arizona.
Yeah.
And then I was able to dunk over...
Richard Jefferson?
Luke Walton,
yeah. There you go. Couple NBA guys.
So it was cool that he asked that yesterday.
His son, so at the practice yesterday, we were watching the guys go back and forth, and you have the scout team and the starters, and Andy's son looked at him and said, Dad, this doesn't seem fair. That's kind of how it goes, yeah.
That's the idea. So are you guys memorabilia guys?
Not
Do you
really.
Have artifacts saved from your playing career?
Not many. They give us all our gear when we leave, all our jerseys, and yeah. I've given every single jersey away that I had. Yeah. I don't save many things.
Now we got the throwbacks. You can get some more.
I might grab a throwback
there. Yeah.
The team loves them, and they want to wear them the rest of the season. They actually wish that we had them in red also, so they could wear them on the road.
Okay.
Because they love. I think they love anything that's new. Right. Yeah. It's funny that it's new because it's actually old.
They look way better in them than we did, those pictures. First of all,
I agree.
It's like I was wearing a double XL back then. I don't know what happened. Everything had to be big, and now they're nice and tight. And they've got the bodies to fit in them too, which is good.
Does it really feel like 20 years? I mean, as you guys sit here and you're trading stories, and I think you've been doing it all weekend, like it was yesterday, does it really feel like 20 years?
It feels like a lifetime ago, but at the same time, it feels like yesterday. You know, being out on the floor yesterday, watching the guys practice, it's like, man, it seems like we were just there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a long time ago. I mean, he's got four kids and I've got two. And so, you know, time flies quickly, but at the same time, man, it was a long time ago. We're old now. Our jerseys are retro.
Well, we walked in there for that practice and the guys started to do their warm-ups. And I think I started to sweat just watching. I'm like, oh, here we go. Coach is going to tell us to get on the line real quick. But yeah, it was good. Those memories feel like not so long ago, but the years go fast.
What's the weekend been like for you guys? What have you got? What have you gone? You were out in practice and you guys got together. What's it been like just seeing all your former teammates and coaches?
It's been great. Just catching up with everybody. We went to practice yesterday and I brought my son, and afterwards we were able to shoot on the court. So that was pretty special to do that. And then I had a nice reception last night.
Andy's still dunking, by the way. 20 years
it's
later.
It's the one thing I can do. I missed every single shot out there, but I can still throw it down.
You had to do it for your son, right? So he could see it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's been great catching up with everybody. And, you know, we went out last night and the stories were flowing and new stories were popping up. And
stories were flowing.
Yeah, it was the stories. Yeah. A few things flowing. But, you know, what was neat, and I think Andy would agree with this, all of us have just been so grateful for Coach Gard in the way he's wrapped his arms around our team, and especially Coach Bennett, because, you know, Coach Bennett was very respectful when he stepped down and gave some space, and obviously Bo did some great things, and I don't think Dick wanted it to at all, you know, be a shadow on that, and that was neat, and I think there's a lot of mutual respect there, and Greg has invited Coach back. My understanding, he's been back and talked to the team,
yeah.
And as a player from those teams, it's neat to see and feel that connection. Even after 20 years, you know, you always have that connection, whether it's year one or year 20. But Coach Gard has been really good about that, and we're all very appreciative. And this weekend, I mean, you guys could have just had us back and said, we'll pull you out at halftime. But instead, they're doing the uniforms and the videos and all the social media stuff. It's really been neat.
Yeah, it's they're going above and beyond, and it's something we realize that they don't have to do, so we're grateful for. It was really cool after practice yesterday, Coach Gard. And I was talking with Coach Bennett. Coach Gard came over and he's like, so how do we look? And Coach Bennett was like, he went into coaching mode and started breaking down their defensive drills. And Coach Gard was listening. It was a genuine question. He wanted to know how they looked. So that was just really cool to see that.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He has publicly said it, privately said it, that he thinks of Coach Bennett as a mentor, even though he didn't serve under him on his staff. But he knows how brilliant he is, first of all, and knows his deep legacy in the state of Wisconsin. And that, yeah, I having talked to Gard about that, that's important to him to put his arms around alumni, former coaches, the whole state of Wisconsin, whoever's got a connection. So I'm happy to hear you guys feeling that,
yeah,
which is good. So, all right, enough of the present. Let's go back in time. This is what I'm here for. When you think back of that season, where does it start? So the run started in the tournament, right? Playing Fresno State. When does it start? When does the season turn?
For me, it was when we were 5-8 in the Big Ten and we were fighting for an NIT bid. And we realized at that time we had to win our next three games just to get the 500 to get a chance to get in the NCAA tournament. And so that was kind of the point of the season where it's like, okay, like we got to do something now or else this is going to be NIT or maybe even no NIT.
Was that the Iowa game?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. I remember.
On the road?
Yeah. So we had a road game at Iowa and the first half was awful. I think we
trailed 26-17 at the half.
That's terrible.
Double-digit turnovers.
So maybe it was halftime of the Iowa game where the season started.
Then what happened?
Oh, man.
Well, Coach Bennett got a technical foul. And
he almost got ejected.
Yes.
Yeah. He bumped the ref. He did.
He got aggressive.
He did.
No,
he probably should have been tossed out of that game.
Yeah. And it honestly, it was the timing was great on that. It woke us up, and we played great in the second half and won that game. And then we had some confidence back and won the next two games. And, you know, we got to 8-8. And I think we still had to do some damage in the Big Ten tournament and win a few more games to get in. But we started that Iowa game is when we started playing real well.
You know,
that was like the beginning of that season for me.
And I don't know what John Bryan did in that second half, but I recall him. They played a zone and John was getting free on the baseline and their whole crowd was like moaning every time he would be open. Like they could see that he was open before their players could see he was open. And I think that was a little bit of the start of John, you know, his senior year, the back half, sure, and realizing that, you know, the clock's running out on him and building some of that confidence. Because as you guys know, we don't make that run if John doesn't get hot.
I mean, absolutely.
He was a totally different player. In fact, I think you guys should cut up some John Bryan highlights and show them to Brevin Pritzel and say,
yes,
just come off a screen and fire, man. In fact, Brevin had that great first half against Michigan State. I'm like, that was John. That was John for a whole run, just coming off screens and firing. And I see similarities between those two guys.
Yeah, for sure. So that halftime speech at halftime of Iowa has been now become the subject of lore. Do you remember Coach Bennett's halftime speech? Or the tone of it, at least.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy. Yeah. And in Iowa, they paint the walls pink.
Do they still do that?
No, like, not anymore.
They stopped that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Football, I think
football
they
stadium.
Might.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're supposed to calm down the opposing team that did not work.
Like a Pepto Bismol pink. Yeah.
Yeah. And Coach was intense, and when we weren't playing well, he'd always challenge us. But that was, you know, we woke up. It worked.
What I remember is in the timeout after Coach got his technical and was bumping the official, Brad Soderberg got in the huddle before Coach Bennett did because he was dealing with the referees. And he looked at us and he screamed. And Sody was a fiery guy, but he didn't scream all that much. And he just said, until you guys care as much as he cares, we're never going to be any good. Okay. And he meant it, you know, and we cared. I mean, it wasn't like we had a team of loafers, but I think, you know, part of Coach Bennett and that whole staff was getting us to push beyond what you thought was 10 for you. It was like, okay, there's another level there. And I think that was kind of one of those moments.
What about the Indiana game at home?
That was
awesome.
At
the end of the year. What do you remember from that one?
That was another game where I think we were down. It was a Sunday game. It was on CBS.
Yep.
So everybody was pretty fired
up. Al McGuire was calling that game.
Yep.
Yeah. And Bobby Knight was still coaching. And my memory from that game is that Maurice Lynn stepped up and made some amazing plays, I think, before going in overtime and then in overtime. And then the students rushed the floor afterwards.
Yep.
And I remember for some reason, Dwayne was frightened with the students rushing the floor and was like in a full out sprint trying to get away and into the locker room so he wasn't going to get trampled.
That's funny.
Like they wouldn't have trampled you, Dwayne. They probably would have lifted you up and pushed you on your shoulders. But that was great game. Good comeback.
At the end of that game, I remember having to shoot free throws. I think I went to the free throw line twice and I shoot like four free throws. And in my head, I was like consciously thinking, if I make these free throws, they're going to rush the floor. And really? I was even then thinking to myself, way too much thought, by the way, on a free throw. Like, this can't be good to be, like, I should just be focused on making the free throw. But all I just thought, they're going to rush the floor. You got to make them. So that was good. And thankfully, I think I did. And they rushed the floor. So that was pretty cool. I just found out yesterday, Otto Pohl's got in a fight.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes, with Indiana's SID, their sports information director.
Yeah, who knocked his glasses off.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then Otto grabbed him by the tie, and they had like,
oh yeah, they had to be separated. Yeah,
legendary. I had no idea. Yeah, apparently it's on film somewhere. I want to see it.
Oh wow, let's dig that up.
Otto says that Coach Bennett showed us that footage in the locker room the next day. Do you remember that?
I don't remember it.
I don't remember it at all. But yeah, that guy, like, I don't want to say took a swing at him, but kind of like threw his arms up and knocked his glasses off.
Court's right at midcourt on the scores table. Yeah. I don't remember it, but I've heard the stories.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
We need more of that on the sideline.
I do remember Bobby Knight slamming his clipboard down and it shattered.
And he had just went hunting and shot his friend. He pulled a Dick Cheney on his buddy. Yes.
Right after that.
All over him.
Yes, yeah. And we had a bunch of students that were in Blaze Orange. Yep. Right in the front. I don't know if that fired.
So he smashed that clipboard and left a dent in the Kohl Center floor. And when they replaced the floor, they actually auctioned that piece off.
Did they really?
And I could be mistaken, but I think they got him to autograph.
Oh, really?
And they auctioned that off for charity that actual piece were his. It was his last Big Ten game, last regular season Big Ten game.
Is that right? Yeah. You know, Bobby Knight, Coach Bennett, like, really looked up to Bobby Knight, as so many coaches did in that era, but they had a nice relationship, which I never knew about until later, but Coach Bennett considered him a mentor.
Hmm. Bo Ryan did, too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that, you know, he's got this persona, Bobby
Knight,
but there's a lot of people that really respect him and what he was able to do as a basketball coach. It was kind of neat to see him come back to Assembly Hall just this last weekend.
It was, yeah.
All right, so now let's jump to Fresno State NCAA tournament. What do you remember about that one? To me, that was perfect matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Like 8-9, you couldn't ask for a better matchup in that one. Jerry Tarkanian, so it was exciting.
And we had played them the year before at their place. We went to Fresno State. They had Chris Heron, if you remember him, Rafer Alston was on that team.
Yeah. Wow.
So they had a really good team, and we lost that game, I think, the year prior.
I think we beat
them. Or did we beat them? Yeah. Okay.
We played them freshman year and sophomore year both times.
And then we played them that year in the first round, and one thing we always remember is they played the worst 2-3 zone known to mankind. And I'm okay with them hearing that because it was so bad. And John hit like 7 threes.
Yep.
And it was really the result of like catching the ball and making a pass fake to one side and then just throwing it back to John on the other side. And he was automatic.
And I was trying to pin the zone on the outside. I've never had a guy try less hard to get around him. He's just like, all right, give up. Screw me. Let him shoot.
I think they wanted to outscore us. Yeah. They didn't want to play defense.
No, not at all.
That was a good matchup.
All right. So you win that one, and that's 8-9 game. That's not an upset necessarily. You guys probably didn't think of that as an upset. But now,
but coming off the year prior when we had scored only 32 points.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
I'll bring it up, yeah. Oh. I mean, in our head, it was like, if we can just win one game, the pressure's going to be off. I mean, we really felt, we were tight going into that game. We were nervous.
Yeah, and we were down again in that game going in the second half. And fears can be a great motivator. And we just did not want to do what we did the year before, which was lay an egg offensively. And so winning that game was the monkey off our back. It was such a relief.
Yep.
And from there, it was like, we have nothing to lose.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
One of the things I think that stands out to me is you guys have already brought up so many names. Like, you talk about Maurice Linton stepping up and making it, taking over a game. You talk about John Bryant's run down the stretch. Like, when I look down the list, that's one thing that stands out about that group is how deep you guys were in terms of how many guys were involved in this run and so many guys could take ownership of it. It wasn't just a starting five. Like, is that how you guys felt at the time, that it's going to take 10 guys, 8 guys to make this happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only guy that was averaging in double figures was Mark Vershaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were playing 9-10 guys. It probably helped us towards the end of the year, especially playing out west with the higher elevations. But it seemed like a different guy was stepping up every game. You know, going through the end of that Big Ten season, going into the tournament, and then it seemed like every game in the tournament it was John Bryant stepping up, getting threes in. But even like fast forwarding to the LSU game, like Julian Schwartz comes in and makes a big basket. I think Roy Boone in that Purdue game played well.
Yep.
So a different guy was stepping up every game.
Like, to his point, so of the 10 guys that had the most minutes on that team, Trevon Davis was the fewest. But in my mind, he was a huge part of the team. The backup point guard. Maybe it's romanticized because of the photo of him sitting on the rim in Albuquerque. I just feel like he was the focal point of the team. But
I got in foul trouble in the first half against Arizona, and he played big minutes in that first half. And we were toe-to-toe with him. But he played a huge part of that game for sure.
So let's visit that Arizona game. Going into the game, were you David versus Goliath? Or were like, no, let's... we could beat these guys. Where were you guys mentally?
to me, it was David versus Goliath. I mean, they were without Lauren Woods, who was their seven-footer, but yep. they still had Gilbert Arenas. They still had Richard Jefferson, still had Luke Walton. They still had, what was the big guy inside?
Michael Wright.
Michael Wright.
Gardner,
who was
the point
incredible.
Guard.
Jason Gardner, who was McDonald's All-American.
A lot of NBA players.
I mean, it was incredible.
More NBA players than you guys had.
And, just a few. So that, I don't know how you felt, but to me, we felt good about getting the win, and it was like, okay, we're going to have to go out and battle every possession. But as long as we can kind of fight with these guys and be respectable, we didn't know if we can win or not. You know, you still, our margin of error was so small. Like every time you took the floor, you felt like this could get ugly. You know, so you never really felt like you could just play it out. But I think that worked to our advantage actually in the long run.
Yeah, we knew if like the feeling we had going into that game, if we don't play well, they're gonna kick our butts.
Yeah.
And so it was, and like everyone kind of had there were so many good players that it wasn't like, you need to stop this guy, you need to stop that guy. It was like, everybody, you need to stop your guy. Cause if you don't, mm-hmm. he can go out for 20. And it worked out well. I mean, we guarded well that game. And I think that's when we started doubling the post.
We did. And I think they were surprised a little bit by our athleticism. I mean, we weren't that athletic of a team, but sneaky athletic maybe, you know what I mean? Andy's pretty, like when Andy dunked on Luke Walton, I know that took him by surprise for sure.
Sure.
The other thing that happened, like the first possession of that game, I got matched up with Luke Walton on the wing, and he just kind of pulled the ball around, and I fouled him so hard. I mean, I hit his forearm. I went for the ball, obviously, and I hit his forearm, and the ball popped out and landed in my hands, and the refs didn't call foul. I don't know how they missed it, and I was like, bet, let's go. Yeah. This is my kind of game. I'm on house money now. And I think we were physical for the rest of the game, and they didn't like that, and it just sort of set the tone for us.
You're just feeding the narrative of all the Big Ten opponents who thought you were probably a
hack. Let me tell you, that was a legit foul. It's overblown in most cases, but I mean, I remember him even looking at the ref like, what are you doing? But yeah, it was bad.
By that point, you guys, okay, so you get past Arizona. It's more than that. Hey, we're scared going into that opener. Like, can we get over the hump? Are we going to not lay an egg? You've left that in the past. How are you feeling by the time you get past Arizona and you're looking at LSU?
We were feeling great. We just did that. Sweet 16.
Tell them about, we had seen LSU beat Texas right before our Arizona game. So
they were at the same first site?
They were.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know why that back then. Okay. But
we were sitting on the baseline, and LSU was on offense on our side, and Stromile Swift was just dunking all over Texas in the first half, and we're like, oh my God.
Dunking and celebrating, and it was like, whoa, man.
He was an amazing athlete.
I mean, it felt like we were watching, you know, Giannis or something. Like, this is crazy. So as much as we were happy to beat Arizona, I was like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, LSU was a tough team, and they were probably overly confident. And so like, they were. Because we.
Do you think they looked down at warmups, looked at the other end of court and go,
oh, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
You've heard the story about doing the press. So we get to Albuquerque for the next round. And, you know, they have like the day before,
press
the players have to go and do whatever. Well, they had Andy and I in like the waiting area. I think the coaches were talking along with Stromile Swift and maybe Jabari Smith or other first round pick. And those guys were sitting there, and I don't think they had phones. So I don't even know what they were doing, but we kind of stroll in and they looked at us and we were like, hey guys, what's up? And they like just put their head down, like wouldn't even acknowledge our existence in the room.
They like literally mean mugged us.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, that's how it's going to be.
Yeah. I was like, all right. Like day before the game, we can't even say hello. But
that's disrespect right there.
Wow. I was scared. I don't know.
And I remember one of their guards, we had a lot of downtime there. I think you get there like 2 days early. And I think I went to the mall with Trevon and Maurice, and they're one of their guards was in a full LSU sweatsuit dribbling a basketball through the mall.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that is the strangest thing I've ever seen. And we were kind of waved at him, and then he did the same thing. He wouldn't even acknowledge us. And just, So they were feeling pretty good going into that game.
You know, Brian, to your point, too, you were talking about the depth of our team, but not really having one guy. And I think that actually helped us, and I think that hurt that team because they had two guys who knew they were going to go make millions in the NBA. And when you get to that part of the season, you wonder. I mean, some guys want to finish out their career strong and end on a high note. And I think that was a case of a couple guys that were – it didn't sting all that much to end their college career because they knew what was waiting for them next. And so that's why in some ways it was an advantage that, you know, none of us were going to go to the NBA, and we knew that. This is all we had.
And you guys had already played together so much by that point. I mean, you're guys that, like you said, just junior year, you had a ton of games together under your belt. So I have to think it was – a much more familial feeling than
absolutely
what those guys had. Yep.
Absolutely.
All right, so you get past that one. Super satisfying to beat the guys who mean mugged you. Did they say anything to you post game? Like, let's put a bow on that one.
No, they had nothing
to say.
No, they didn't really. I mean, it was weird. Like,
I remember Jabari Smith was crying during the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
During the game?
At the end.
He made
at the end of the game, he was
crying. That's so mean.
Yeah. Well, he mean mugged us, so he deserved it.
Yes, he did.
So you win that one, and you. When did it become realistic in your minds that you could go to the Final Four? Maybe not until after that one when you're one game away, or did the Arizona win say, you know what? Hey, why not?
It was after the LSU win.
Yeah.
Because we had Purdue in the Elite Eight, and we had already beaten them twice that year. And we beat them in the Big Ten tournament. That was our second victory in the Big Ten tournament.
I was worried about that game, though, like watching it as a fan, the Purdue game.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
it's hard to beat a team three times in a year. And so, but we knew we could beat them, so that's when it became real. And I think that's when we really started believing in ourselves. And, you know, Coach had an amazing pregame speech before that game. You could hear a pin drop, and he was emotional, and it was perfect. It got us fired up. It kind of, you know, it gave some gravity to the moment. It's like, wow, we're here. And we had a theme that year. It was called Touch the Dream. And so he weaved that into that pregame. I get tingles right now just thinking about it, actually.
Yeah.
And that was special. That was really special.
That Purdue game was scary, though, because that was, like, all our advantages we had for those first three games of, like, teams that maybe didn't want to play physical or didn't respect us or thought they could out-athlete us or whatever, that wasn't Purdue. I mean, they knew who we were, and they played like us. I mean, they were every bit as tough as us and probably more athletic with some of their
and
guys.
And they were playing for Gene Katie to get him. Right, like, they had the same sort of motivation.
Like, yeah, like, everything that we sort of had going for us, we didn't have for that game. Right. And the other thing I always remember is we filled out brackets. Oh, you're probably not supposed to do that as a student athlete. I can admit that
you
now.
You fill it out as long as you don't put money on it, right. I suppose. So
I actually we'll did. We didn't put money, but we filled it out, unless we had something in our apartment, maybe. I don't know. But I had us getting to the Elite Eight, which was crazy to think.
Sure.
And playing Purdue, and I had us losing to Purdue on my bracket. Yeah. Whoa. And I'm like, I didn't tell a soul
about
that.
How many guys
that.
Knew that?
I didn't tell anybody about that until we beat them. I'm like, all right. Now I can show you my bracket. Yeah. I was really nervous. I'm like, did I just like create my destiny here and write it down? We're going to lose this game.
But, never been so happy to be wrong.
Yes. That was great. That was really good.
Okay. Now this is where I want some story time on this. So you beat Purdue and State Street is rioting and it's going madness at home. How did you learn that people were going bananas back home? And let me preface it because so I was fortunate enough to be in our locker room in 2014 when the team went back to the Final Four. And so we had just beaten Arizona in L.A. Was it L.A.? Anaheim? Anyway, Anaheim, yeah. And in the locker room, it's the era of Twitter and text messages and all that. So the guys are looking at their phones.
Oh, yeah.
And there's videos of people on State Street, and they were getting so jacked up and couldn't wait to get home. Because they're like, look at what's happening back in Madison. But you didn't have that. So how did you know what was happening back here?
I didn't know how big it was going to be, but Andy Katz did an interview. We were getting on the bus, heading out of whatever the arena is, the pit there in Albuquerque, and Katz was like, hey, can you do a quick hit for me? So I'm talking to him, and he goes, you know they're having a big deal at Camp Randall for you guys when you come back. And I was like, no way. But no one knew how many people were going to be there. In the back of your head, you're like, oh, God, if it's like 300 people, this is going to be really weird at Camp Randall. But he was the one that
one in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
When you guys got back. Okay, keep going, sorry.
But my, that was the only thing. So there was a little bit of a buzz of like, what's this going to be like? That's my memory of it.
Yeah, I remember after the game, like trying to hustle back to the hotel to watch the Michigan State-Iowa State game.
Mm. We were in for Iowa State hard.
And they almost beat them.
Yeah,
they almost beat them.
Winning
late.
Yeah. Jamal Tinsley would have dropped like 40 on me, but I still wanted to play him over Michigan State. Like anybody but Michigan State.
It was
State.
Like 50-50 for me because I would have had to guard Marcus Fizer.
Yes.
And he was a beast.
Oh, incredible.
But anyways, I remember like I didn't hear anything. And I think when we were flying back on the flight, somebody mentioned we're going to Camp Randall. But when we were flying from Albuquerque, we flew over Camp Randall. There's nobody in the stadium. Like, I don't think they had let anyone in yet. Oh. So I was thinking like, Mike, I mean, this is going to be really strange. When only a couple hundred people show up. And then we had no idea. We're taking the bus and everyone's happy. And we pull around the corner between the field house and the press box side of Camp Randall. Yep. And like, you could just see all the people in there. And I was like, holy cow.
It was just filled. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Probably, I don't know, 20, 25,000 people are on that one side of Camp Randall. And I was like, we got to say something. Like,
that was the panic. We had to figure out like, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? And we all said some variation of let's go party on State Street. That was like pretty much, we didn't have a lot of deep thoughts, but we knew we wanted something epic to happen afterwards.
But you had the best. You just said.
I did the what's up.
That was during the Bud Light commercials.
Yeah, the Bud Light.
You brought the house down. Like, what am I supposed to say after Mike goes?
You know, there was a weird like delay between when you would speak and when it would come back to you. Do you remember that?
Yeah, so if you're not used to speaking on that mic, it's weird.
It was really weird. It was hard. And Coach Bennett was trying to give his speech, and he was talking. It was kind of going
back. Do you
back
remember and, his? I do.
Yes, it was about like the Wild Kingdom.
The Animal Kingdom, yes.
But so many people were like, Coach Bennett was loaded. And I'm like, no, he wasn't. He didn't drink anything. He just couldn't talk because of the feedback.
I remember he was getting like mad at the microphone. He kept looking at it and just getting angry at it.
So he's like, first we played the Bulldogs and we tamed the Bulldogs. Then we took on the Wildcats and then the Tigers and then the Boilermakers. Like, and then Boilermakers. And then the analogy ended.
Close enough. Yep. No, that was
what
funny.
Else do I remember?
Our roommate, so we lived right... There's one apartment right between the Red Shed and that parking ramp on Francis Street. I don't know if you're aware that is, right? There's like Wando's Red Shed, then an apartment. That was Andy and ours for 3 years after our freshman year. That's where we live. It's a great spot. And our non-basketball playing roommate was there in the stands, and he might have celebrated until we got back. And... remember people rushed the field.
Yes,
I don't know if you had seen that.
It happened. I don't know if I remember it. I was there, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you and him both, because there was a chain link fence between the stands and the field that he had to hop over. People had to hop over to get on the field. And he ripped his jeans like almost off and broke a couple ribs going over. Yeah, and then found us and stumbled home. And so we ended up taking his jeans and like nailing them to the wall as like a memory of that for the next year and a half. That's what we had on the wall.
And I remember your dad like driving back from Camp Randall, almost ran him over.
He did.
You know, slam his brakes.
We're throwing our buddy out. We'll keep his name out of this. But yeah, my dad, it was like right on Regent Street. And my dad was driving. He's like, this guy's going to die in the middle of the road. And he gets a little closer and he's like, Rob? he goes, why don't you come in the car? We'll get you home. That was a good time. We still had a game to play, though, so we couldn't go too crazy.
I may or may not have been on my roommate's shoulders in the crowd there.
Oh, nice.
May or may not. That can't be confirmed nor denied.
No social media back then. You were saying,
I know. Thank God there wasn't.
Yeah, right?
It's a different era now.
Thank God there wasn't is right, because especially from the year prior, that Southwest Missouri State game, I cringe to think of what it would have been like. I mean, maybe we could have dealt with it better because we would have grown up with it. But as a 41-year-old guy looking at what these kids have to go through, I don't think I could have handled it as well as they do. It's hard.
So then how do you guys handle all this high of coming off the win? You're greeted with this huge crowd at Camp Randall, and then you're turning around and you're going to Indianapolis. How do you reset yourself and get ready for something that is such a huge stage?
Yeah, it really, the whirlwind just never stops, because you know, you're trying to take care of your schoolwork and everybody's nursing injuries and rehabbing, and you've got practice all week trying to do, you know, we're doing a lot of media interviews during the week, and going back, I wish I could have let it soak in a little bit more, but I don't know how you could have.
It happened so fast.
Yeah. And it's a short week and you're traveling. I remember our practices that week. Like, we practiced hard. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no, you know, we're going to, you know, go light and take care of our bodies. Like, coaches, like, we need to practice hard to be ready for Michigan State. And I think that was the right approach. I mean, we thought we were ready going to that game. We just didn't play well.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a good game plan. And, you know, we knew to beat them that you got to get back and you got to rebound. But, you know, we stopped hitting shots in that game.
Yeah. That's just what it was. I remember, and you guys, the sports information department, did a really good job of protecting us from too many interviews and trying to, you know, get fatigued. But I still remember by the end of that week, I was worn out a bit, because you end up answering the same questions for this guy, and then the next guy wants it for his camera, and the next guy. And I remember, and we didn't do everything that we could have done, but people were trying to call the hotel room, and that then was like, no, don't answer the phone if someone calls there. But it was a different time, I think. There's more media now, and I think the kids are better about it, but we weren't used to that. I mean, that was like thrust into a whole new world for us, and that took its toll, I thought, as the week went on.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen it now in 14 and 15 when the team went, and there's more now, I would guess, than they had to. Like, they put them on this Hollywood movie set, and they do all these elaborate intros that you guys probably didn't do. But they've also kind of done that all year.
Right.
You know, yeah, so I think your point is valid that it was more of the same, just bigger.
Right.
Yep. Where for you guys, it was probably wild.
And it's like, it seems weird to say like that's exhausting, but there is a certain level of like getting up for TV or answering questions or whatever.
That, especially when it's repetitive.
Yeah, it just sort of takes its toll after a while.
Do you remember the feeling of taking that court for the first time in Indy?
Yes, for the
practice. Playing in a dome? I mean.
It was different.
25,000 people for the practice. And then, but we did, so we used to have what was like 50 passes or whatever it was. We had to do so many passes, it was like part of our warm-up thing. And the whole goal was to be strong with the ball. The defense knew so they could foul you. They knew you weren't going to shoot. And Coach Bennett, we were running it, and he goes, uh-oh, they're going to think this is our offense. 25,000 people watching, like, no, this is a drill. And yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, I remember the thing at those practices is to dunk and at the end of practice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And put on a show.
Yeah, and ours was kind of at maybe for the Final Four, you know, average to below average.
Yeah, well, I didn't dunk.
Yeah, and so we were, you know, we're trying to do 360 windmills, and they just weren't going in. And I think Maurice was probably our best dunker. He was,
and Roy. We had Maurice and Roy, thankfully, they saved face for us.
I just remember like the press showing, some clips, and like we're just missing all our dunks.
Power lamps.
There you go. We're sandbagging.
Shoot some threes.
So what do you got? What do you guys think of the legacy of that team and what you guys were able to do?
You know, I think it's a great example of teamwork. You know, we didn't have any stars. We didn't have any guys that went to the NBA. It's just an example of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. And you know, the other thing too is just never quitting. I mean, we were dead in the water. I think we were 1-4 in the Big Ten. Then we were 3-6, 5-8, and then we just never quit. We just flat out didn't quit. The coaches didn't quit. And the defense as well. Like we won those games because of our defense. And I think we struggled during the regular season because we weren't hitting shots. But when we started hitting shots on top of playing really good defense, allowed us to win those ball games.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it showed a style that could work. As you know, the 20 years has passed and we've seen the success the team has had. So much of the success hasn't really changed. I mean, the players have gotten better. The offense has gotten better. But at the end of the day, taking care of the basketball, playing good defense, being sound fundamentally in all the little things is really a recipe, I think, for this particular university. I mean, we're in Wisconsin in the Midwest. You have a certain recruiting base of kids you're going to get. And I think that, probably parallels a little bit the football team and the way they've found their own success too. And you have to be willing to embrace that. And that's why I've gotten so defensive and more defensive, I think, over the years as I hear people take shots at the system and what it isn't rather than embrace what it is. And for people that were around before that Final Four run that saw how hard it was for us to have any type of postseason success, to take that for granted really bums me out sometimes. But I don't want to pay attention to the haters because for the most part, I think this state has embraced, okay, this is definitely who we are and this is how it's got to be done. But that's how Bo did it and that's how Greg has done it. And I think it's the right way. I really do.
That's well said from both of you. I'll wrap it up with my perspective on what that team's legacy was. And there was a video that we shared on social media this week and pregame about that team wrote their Cinderella story so that Wisconsin would never be Cinderella again. And I firmly believe that you guys were Cinderella. That was appropriate in that time because it was out of nowhere and that program hadn't done that since 1941, a lifetime ago. But ever since then, the bar has changed. The standard has changed. And no matter what seed Wisconsin is now, if they were a 12 seed and they beat and they had an upset over Fresno State in 2008, 2009, they still weren't a Cinderella because it's Wisconsin. It's this major brand. Yeah. And that changed the year you guys went to the Final Four.
That's awesome. Was that your line, by the way?
That's not important.
You can take credit. That felt like a Patrick Herb line. That's when you say that, every time I hear that and I've watched that video, that part, man, that gives me chills. And so many people have said it's just goosebumps when you hear that. I appreciate you coming up with that, and that's a heck of a legacy. We're very proud.
Well, we're happy to have you guys here. Proud of what you're able to do. Proud we could get you back in town to celebrate.
Thanks. Congrats again. Congrats on 20 great years of the program after you and what you guys did. Thanks for being part of our podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. Guys.
Go Badgers.
Shouts to Mike and Andy. Shouts to all the 2000 Final Four members that came back for this reunion. Awesome for me personally.
What a huge fanboy awesome. Moment for you.
Oh my goodness. Yep. Let's go over the top on this. Let's go. I had the t-shirt that I bought. So I went down to Indianapolis as a fan and like thousands and thousands of other people. And I bought a t-shirt on the side, you know, on the sidewalk somewhere of Final Four logo. And I brought it in today for the game. Just get a little magic from that team. I still have it. I don't have a lot of things from 20 years ago, but I do have that. And that, I will keep it for another 20 years, I think. I got a couple things from 2014 and 2015 when that team went, and I'll probably hang on those. And I will say this, it made me excited for whenever that reunion happens. It's a long way away, right? But there were probably a few of those guys in the building, Ben Brust or Josh Gosser or Showalter, some of the guys that live locally, they might have been in the building today. And if they were watching that, they had to be like, that's going to be really cool when it's me someday.
Especially with that cast of characters.
Yeah.
Because that is what they were.
Wouldn't it be cool to have all those guys come back, Nigel and Frank and Sam, whenever that is, 15 years from now or 20 years from now, and it's a 25th anniversary, whatever it is, that's going to be a party. Yeah,
we're going to need more than one interview to try to capture all of that.
We're going to need some, what do you call the transcription? We're going to need a...
Oh, the stenographer.
Yeah, we're going to need some stenographers on hand for that.
Definitely.
One. Definitely. All right, thanks for listening to our podcast. Check us out on social media. On Twitter, we're at Behind Badgers. You can email us too. We'd love to hear some feedback or some suggestions on who you want, what kind of guests you want coming up the rest of this spring and even this summer. I think we're going to continue this at some level in the summer when the Badger sports are off. And so what kind of things would you want to hear about? Today we had a great guest of legends looking back in time. We can go down that road with some others. So send us an email, behindthebadgers@gmail.com. Get at us on our personal Twitter handles. He's Brian_Mason. I'm at Patrick Herb. And for now, though, we got a week till the Wisconsin basketball team's back in action. Let's soak up today. Today was a good day for Wisconsin basketball. We'll soak it up for all week, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.